Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be across whatever time zone you reside in. From the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, good morning out there. South into South America, north all the way to the pole, and of course, worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning, I'm Art Bell. Coming up in a moment, Elizabeth Clare Prophet, an interview I've been waiting a long time for. It is a rare opportunity for you to hear Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She doesn't do a lot of interviews, and we'll talk about that. So we'll get to Elizabeth Clare Prophet in a moment. Now, Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She is a mystic, writer, lecturer, and spiritual teacher. But first and foremost, she is a messenger for enlightened spiritual beings called Ascended Masters. As a messenger, she is both spokesman and scribe, speaks and writes down the words of the Masters. In this role, she has recorded some of the world's most beautiful and profound spiritual teachings. The vast body of work she has produced includes more than 1,800 messages, or if you wish, dictations, that come through the agency of the Holy Spirit from various Ascended Masters, Archangels, and other advanced spiritual beings. She and her late husband, Mark L. Prophet, have published more than 75 books, on the teachings of the Ascended Masters. These include the bestsellers Saint Germain on Alchemy, The Human Aura, The Lost Years of Jesus, and The Lost Teachings of Jesus. And I have much more I could read about Elizabeth, but instead I will simply go to her. Elizabeth Clare Prophet, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a rare opportunity to be able to interview you at all. You don't do a lot of them, do you?
I haven't done it recently, but I'm going to get back on track.
Back on track, huh?
Right.
I think I would rather have you sort of tell your own story, Elizabeth. In other words, when Elizabeth Clare Prophet, the regular woman, came to be changed.
I had a profound changing experience when I was 4 years old. And this was the beginning of my spiritual life in this incarnation. I was playing in the sand in my sandbox that my father had built for me. It was a beautiful day. It was blue skies and clouds, and my parents had beautiful gardens that we worked together in, and all of a sudden I found that I was no longer in Red Bank, New Jersey, playing in my sandbox, but I was on the Nile River in Egypt.
Egypt?
In Egypt. And there I was, 4 years old, still, but I was in a different life, and I knew I was in a different life. Mm-hmm. And there were people around me, there was a governess or an attendant, and I was slipping the sand through my fingers, and after I was there for a while and got a hold of where I was and what I was doing, I came back almost on those clouds, back to my play yard, back to my sandbox. And when I collected myself, I ran up to the back door and I called my mother and I said, "This is what has happened to me. Please explain it to me. What did happen to me?" And because I have had a wise mother, she did not deny me. She told me in very simple terms that I had remembered a past life. So that was the beginning of my understanding that I had a mission. 3,300 years before, I had lived in Egypt, in that life, at the time of Akhenaten. And I recalled it, and I also saw very clearly in Mark Prophet, my late husband, the very same profile of Akhenaten.
Elizabeth, can you recall when you were in Egypt? Can you recall a physical form? Can you recall, in other words, was Was it with the clarity of a conscious experience in the here and now, or was there something different about it?
It was very concrete. It was as simple as sand flowing between your fingers. I was just as real and concrete and physical in my own sense of it, at least. And there was just nothing to it. It was as easy as, it was soul travel when I knew nothing about soul travel and the word hadn't even been coined.
Yes, a lot of talk about it now, soul travel. So that began an obvious change for you.
Well, I then decided, well, I have to find a church. I have to find out about God. I have to find out what Jesus wants me to do because I know I have a mission in this life. And so I went to every church in town, and I found that much of what was being said was like a milksop. It really wasn't getting to the core of inner communion with God as a mystical path, as something we live every day of our lives. And I was finding a Christianity that I knew was not right. I knew in my own heart that Jesus taught the mysteries and that he gave them to the inner circle and then to the wider circle of the other 70, and that somehow world religion today or Protestantism and Christianity itself, Catholicism, were simply not willing to tell the truth about the message of Jesus Christ, and it became a fire that would burn in me that I could not put out. I had to follow that fire until I would have all the answers.
You are convinced that there is a big missing part of Christianity not told that involves the teachings of reincarnation. Is that about right?
That's absolutely true, that reincarnation was removed in 325 AD in the Council of Nicaea.
I believe that is absolutely correct, yes. Why was it taken out? Was it a fear?
It was a control factor. As they recrafted Christianity and stripped out everything that was wonderful about Jesus Christ and the saints, they wound up with the theory of reincarnation that was kind of a leftover. And what happened was they realized that they would never be able to control their followers if they retained reincarnation. So they threw it out. They absolutely threw it out because they wanted people to know that they only had one life, one chance to make it. They'd either go to heaven or hell. And if they had left the people to reincarnation, they can say, well, we won't go to church in this life. We'll go in our next life.
Would also affect the fear of death itself, I suppose. And as you point out, control.
Absolutely control. Constantine thought it would be a good idea to consolidate Christianity. And he was convinced by everyone else that reincarnation could not be left in, because then you could not control the people. So their theory was the way you get to heaven is through the church, when in reality what Jesus taught us, we get to heaven through the flame, the eternal flame of God that burns on the altar of our individual hearts.
So you in no way deny Jesus. You simply deny the accuracy of his teachings. That's wrong. I'm sorry. The way they were passed on.
That's right. And Origen of Alexandria and many very sharp people were not able to undo this. So Nicaea led inevitably to the rejection of reincarnation, since reincarnation goes along with the idea that salvation is a matter of individual effort rather than status in the church.
Elizabeth, what do you consider to be the best evidence for reincarnation? Regressive hypnosis, that sort of thing? What is the best evidence?
I think the best evidence comes to us when God sends an angel to us because we are ready to receive an understanding that we've had a recent past life, and that angel opens that past life to us and says, oh, okay, these are the good things you did in that life, and you've made a lot of progress in your field, et cetera, et cetera. But these are the other things, the negatives, that are not so good. So the angel comes to warn you, get on the track of love, because love is the fulfilling of the whole law, and move on with your life.
Well, I believe that.
I think that when we are ready, we don't even need to have hypnotic regression, because God comes and tells us about our mission.
There has been, though, impressive evidence rendered by a lot of studies, you know, done by clinicians with regressive therapy and taking people back into prior lives.
That's true, and I'm sure that a lot of it is accurate and some of it may not be accurate. But people are trying because people want to know what is the continuity of life.
It's the biggest question of all.
That's right.
And you're saying there certainly is a continuity of life. Now, I have a whole bunch of questions about reincarnation. Is it an endless process? Or
no, it's not endless.
It's not endless.
It is not endless. We come to this world, and this world is a schoolroom. We learn our lessons here. We come back again and again because in the course of being here, we may wrong life. We may move against life. We may suddenly decide that we're jealous about something that's happened in our world, and here we are making karma. So on the path of reunion with God, it must be a path of love and a path of the Holy Spirit, and it must be individual to us within the innermost recesses of our being, the secret chamber of the heart.
There are a lot of obvious questions about reincarnation, and I guess they're answered by karma, but I've never fully understood them. For example, it seems as though people in this life, a lot of them, the bad guys, get to live long, luxurious, wealthy lives, and a lot of poor people who are do-gooders seem to suffer, and they are the poor and the starving all over the world. It just sort of doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Paul says, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And what we are doing and what we are seeing is we are reaping the good and the bad of our past lives. And we are sowing again, hopefully, for a better harvest. And because we do not see that these power people are themselves have a tremendously heavy karma and that God is dealing with them, then we begin to feel, well, God is unjust. Whereas if you take the poor people in the world who have nothing, they have a certain karma that they are working through also. And we can help them by our love, by sending them food, clothing, and so forth. I mean, we are here to help the poor. And we have to realize that this power elite, a certain part of it, is not even the type of people that most people are on Earth. These are powerful beings that are fallen angels that move on the left side, the left side of the coin, if you will have it.
And they come to an end.
And that's why John the Baptist went out into the wilderness and called them a generation of vipers. Who hath warned you, you know, to come out here when you have done all these evil wrongs? So John the Baptist was challenging them all the way. But what the children of God have to become is sons of God and to look for the empowerment of God to ultimately challenge these fallen ones who move in our midst to control the monies of our institutions, of our countries, and do manipulate society.
Is there a war going on now?
There are wars within our members. Like I could have a warring within my member where one part of me is at opposition to another part of me. And then there are threatenings of world war. There are always people on this planet.
No, I meant on a spiritual plane. In other words, you mentioned...
Like Armageddon in another dimension?
No, just a very strong present conflict between whatever it is that creates evil now on Earth and our Creator. It seems like there's a war going on, and I sometimes think the dark forces are winning.
Well, the war's been going on a long time. Aliens arrived on planet Earth, according to Zachariah Sitchin, about 500,000 years ago. And there's a certain group of people in this world who will never say die. They will always be engaged in some type of war, and also in the desire to amass wealth and territory.
Mm-hmm.
And that still is in the minds of adversaries in the United States and throughout the world. War is still a business in this world.
Certainly is. I have written a book myself. You've got a brand new book. I wrote a book, and I'll just briefly tell you about it and see if I can get a comment from you. It's called The Quickening, Elizabeth, and I've spent about 13 years in this incarnation of this radio show. And during that time, every day, religiously, I study the news. And I have noticed over the last decade or so that events in every single area of human endeavor, social, political, geophysical, economic, in every endeavor of human activity, events appear to be accelerating at an exponential rate. And I just called it The Quickening. It's just a name I gave to it. But it seems to me that we are headed for an event. I am not a prophet, and I don't know what that event would be, but I see us racing toward something at an ever-increasing speed. What might that be?
We move in cycles, so we are at the conclusion of the Piscean Age. The cycles are approximately 2,150 years. And, for instance, during the Age of Pisces, we have reincarnated again and again. And some of us have sown well and reaped well, and others of us have gotten into all kinds of different practices in the Middle Ages, of witchcraft, black magic, and so forth. What's happening is when you come to the end of an age, there is a recompense. And all of us who have been in the Age of Pisces need to balance the karma we made in that age, the good karma and the bad karma. And if we come out on top with more good karma than bad karma, that's good. But many times, because people do not have real spiritual teachers, they don't have guides, they don't have prophets, and the dark ages descend, that people do not know the way to go. And so we find ourselves making karma when we should be balancing karma. So the karma of the Piscean Age has fallen due, and it is accelerated, and it is coiling down into the physical plane. It started out in the etheric level, then it goes to the mental belt, then it goes to the desire body of the earth, and then it finally hits the earth body itself. And that's when diseases come about, all kinds of wars, all kinds of tornadoes, hurricanes, upheavals, deaths, all kinds of strange things start happening because individual karma is being visited upon each one of us.
Well, that's exactly what I see coming. I've got a kind of a favorite analogy, maybe not a very good one, but I think an accurate one. There was a time in this country when if somebody wanted to rob a little 7-Eleven or a convenience store, you know, they'd go in with a gun and say, "Give me your money," and they'd put it in the bag and back out the door, get in the car, and speed away. Today's robbery seems to include going in with a gun, saying, "Give me your money," and then, as an afterthought on the way out, with no regard for life whatsoever, killing the guy behind the counter, then speeding off. In other words, there has been a cheapening of life. It doesn't mean what it once did.
I agree with you, and totally. It's frightening, and I think it starts with mothers going to work. And mothers have to be home with their children. Otherwise, they don't have that nurturing and that sense of reverence for life.
In your view, Elizabeth, is there any turning back, or is our course in this acceleration of events unalterable?
Did you say unalterable?
Alterable, yes. Are we unable to change what is coming, whatever it happens to be?
I think that permanent change comes through the Holy Spirit. And I think we should all be communing with the Holy Spirit. We should know that the Holy Spirit is not just a spirit, but also a very high master who is called the Great Lord, the Mahachohan.
All right. Elizabeth, Claire Prophet, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we will be right back. You might want to stay planted right where you are. My guest is Elizabeth Clare Provitt. She hasn't been doing a lot of interviews, but kind of back on the circuit. She's got a brand new book. Fascinating title. It's called Reincarnation, The Missing Link in Christianity. Dare you read?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
It is exactly that. My guest is Elizabeth Clare Provitt, and she'll be right back. Once again, Elizabeth Clare Provitt. Elizabeth?
Hi.
I would like to deal with a little bit with you with the essence or what really is on what we call the other side. It's humanity's greatest question. Is there any simple answer to it, or is it a complicated answer? In other words, when we die, what occurs? Where do we go?
I'm very grateful that you brought this question to the fore, because I wanted to talk about suicide.
Good.
Suicide is not an out. And in reality, those who commit suicide find out very quickly that they do not move from where they committed that suicide.
They don't move.
Yes, they do not have the skill of locomotion. They have a soul, but they no longer have a functioning body. They have a mind, but they cannot use the physical body any longer. So the first thing they find out when they commit suicide is that they can't get anywhere. They're stuck. So whereas this group of individuals thought that they were going somewhere or other to a better place, they did not really know the rule or the law of suicide, where I've seen it over and over and over again. The person who commits suicide, his astral body, the part of him that is not physical, simply gets stuck there. So what I see happening in this house as this event unfolds and takes place is that these individuals woke up to the fact, after they committed suicide, that they have gotten nowhere, zilch. They're not going anywhere. So now, As they have discovered that suicide is not the answer, they're engaged in arguing, fighting with each other. They're not touching each other, but they are reaching a level of being absolutely furious because they've been duped, and now they can't get back into their bodies. I don't believe in Kevorkian or anybody else's reasons for suicide. I think it's really playing with life and death. So what we have here is a group of souls who are stuck.
They don't reincarnate?
I'm talking about these individuals in the mansion.
Yeah, in Los Angeles, right. That's what I'm saying. They're literally their spirit or their soul. And by the way, may I ask, is the spirit and the soul the same thing?
No, not really. If you take soul with a lowercase s, you find out that the soul that is within us, and it is attached to the solar plexus chakra, actually, it's attached to the seat of the soul chakra just below the solar plexus. That is the place where the soul resides in our bodies. And that soul does not have immortality until that soul becomes the bride of her holy Christ self, who is at a much higher plane. So as long as the soul does not have immortality because she has not balanced her karma, she is vulnerable to going through death. So what we want to do, what is our responsibility as people, is to protect our soul and to elevate that soul until that soul becomes the bride of Christ within us. Then we make the step from our mortality to our immortality. I don't know if you've heard of the Blessed Mother of our Lord, but she has counseled us to pray unceasingly for souls who will die unless they come into union with God before the end of his life. And that's part of the being at the end of the age of Pisces.
Can a Buddhist achieve that?
Anyone can achieve union with God. Anyone can nurture the soul so that the soul then becomes a part of the reality of ourselves. Our highest reality is the I am that I am. The manifestation of God as Moses taught us. And then comes the mediator between that God and our lower self, and that mediator is the Holy Christ self. And each one of us has a Holy Christ self, and sometimes we call that person our guardian angel. But the Holy Christ self is our mentor and teacher, and he stays with us lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And when we walk and talk with him and commune with him, he teaches us profound truths. But if we're not listening, because we have too much noise all around ourselves,
yes,
then we don't hear what the angels are saying to us from inner planes and from the heaven world.
Well, we have a lot of noise going on in this world of ours today. You believe there are many planes of existence, etheric, astral, mental.
But many divisions of those planes, according to what people have done in their previous lives.
So many, many divisions.
Many divisions, yes. The very high levels of the heaven world are in the planes of nirvana and beyond.
I interviewed the late Robert Monroe before he died. Have you read his writings?
No, I haven't.
You have not?
No.
He talked about the various planes as well, and I was just wondering if you would, but apparently not.
I should get a hold of that book.
But
getting back to these individuals in this mansion.
Yes.
Loved ones should pray for them that their souls be taken out of that mansion and to a plane of existence where they can understand where they went wrong and why suicide is never acceptable in the sight of God. They need a lot of prayers. Otherwise, they're going to be stuck right where they are.
Elizabeth, when, say, these 39, actually in America, in the last year we had stats for it, 1995, 30,800 people committed suicide. Now, there are a lot of records of hauntings and spirits seen or heard or felt or poltergeist, or there's a million names for them. Are these beings that, for the reasons we're talking about now, are stuck here in effect?
The soul of the deceased is stuck where, what is the saying that goes, wherever we are, that's where we lie, you know, in a conclusion. After a fashion.
So
what we're saying here is the soul is sealed in the seat of the soul chakra, and that soul must move to gain her immortality. These individuals need to have their loved ones and all of us pray for them to get out of this level where they are stuck and into a realm of the heaven world where they can learn what went wrong, why it went wrong, and how not to do it again the next time you have an opportunity to once again be born through a mother and have life again.
When you received news of the cult suicide at Rancho Santa Fe, how did you react?
I felt tremendously aghast because I've seen this happen so many times where people think suicide is an out. And it came to me as just another excuse, another reason not to face life and face its challenges. And if I could only get that one message to people, that if you commit suicide, you are going nowhere. And it may take you a long time before you find another mother to bring you into this world so that you can fulfill your reason for being.
So in other words, you've got to play your hand out all the way, wherever it leads, however it goes.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the joy of life. We don't know what's coming around the bend. It could be pain, sorrow. And it could be followed by a tremendous victory. At any time we would cut off our life, we might lose the best of it.
You have, in Montana, Elizabeth, built... what do you have there? What do you say you have there? Is it a ranch? Is it a place where people simply gather to hear your message?
We have a community, which is a community of the Holy Spirit. And... we produce our publications and our teachings. We have a center where we nourish our churches throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're located all over the world. And we publish our books. We nurture those who are in our centers around the world. And it's an ongoing mission to bring the lost teachings of Jesus Christ into the Aquarian Age. And to learn from Saint Germain, the hierarch of the Aquarian Age, how to use the violet flame to transmute our karma.
When does the Aquarian Age begin?
Well, you know, ages seem to crisscross. It seems like the Piscean Age has been coming for the last 400 years. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And overlapping it is the Aquarian Age that is also coming in, but has had its beginnings earlier. So there is that overlapping when Pisces and Aquarius move together, and then finally Pisces is concluded, and we really feel the winds of Aquarius for what they are.
So we're in that period of change now?
Yes, we're in that transition right now.
How long will that last?
Well, the age of Aquarius will be that 2,150-year period, just as Pisces had that same figure. And so we are entering Aquarius. Much of what is happening right now is Aquarian in nature, such as technology, such as computers, such as all kinds of advancements in medicine. Everywhere you look, fantastic leaps are taking place, and people are moving on to a tremendous ability in technology, which goes along with the age of Aquarius.
Well, we certainly are moving rapidly.
Yes, we are.
And I sometimes wonder, if not too rapidly, for example, the recent news that it at least is possible, they think, to clone a human being.
Oh, yes.
I'm not sure that we're prepared for the moral and ethical and spiritual questions that we're going to have to struggle with to be able to do this right now, are we?
Well, my take on this is you can create a body as a clone, but you cannot create a soul. Only God can create a soul. Only God can endow you with the spark of eternal life. So then, if you clone someone and there's no conscience, there's no inner threefold flame, there's no inner Holy Spirit, then who, pray tell, is this clone? Can a clone replicate everything we've done in this life, a past life, all preceding lifetimes?
Well, I don't know.
Well, that's the big question. Is this some kind of a blank piece of paper that we, like a cutout, you know, we cut around the edges, and then we come up with a picture of a man.
So you're concerned that might be a soulless being?
Absolutely. I mean, who's going to create a soul for that body? Where's that soul going to come from? It's not going to come from nowhere.
It
might as well be an animal. It might as well be some kind of a human animal.
Well, then, and perhaps it would be until we do it. I guess we will not know. Then, what about the process of reincarnation itself, the age-old question that I might as well ask you? There are consistently more people on Earth, and more people on Earth, and more people on Earth. And the obvious question is, where are all these souls coming from? Previously, previous incarnations? Or what is the answer to that one?
The answer is that over many thousands of years, even 10,000s of years, people have continued to reincarnate on Earth. They haven't had the world teachers, the great mentors, so they don't know how to get out of this human existence, so they make karma. We all make karma unless we're very fastidious about it. We have to keep our harmony. We have to love God, love one another. I mean, attaining union with God is a challenge. And so here we are with many, many people being born, and then many, many people who don't attain union with God. So now there's this weight on planet Earth of people who should have gone on in their evolutionary chain, who have not gone on because they have not passed the certain tests they should have passed in entering into or merging their soul with their Holy Christ self and ultimately becoming one with God and never returning again in this physical octave.
All right, well, that then brings up another question. You know, there are a lot of young people today. There are so many things going on that are, for me, indecipherable. For example, little children killing other children, dropping them out of windows, shooting other children without a thought to life. It very blank-eyed, you would almost say when you look at them, soulless children. Is that going on Earth today? Are there people walking around who, as we understand it, literally don't have souls?
Well, the soul, as we've discussed, is mortal and therefore can be terminated. Then you have these individuals such as children, but these children have reincarnated. The question is, what is their background? How can a child of 6 or 7 or 8 kill another child or a baby? We have to look at that person's past life. What was he doing yesterday and before he was born? Mm-hmm. How was he mistreated?
Mm-hmm.
Who moved against him that made him cry out against society and therefore commit a crime against a child?
So therefore, if we see societal conditions degenerating at a pretty fast pace, what does that say about future incarnations and karma? Is there hope that it's going to get better, or will it continue to deteriorate?
See, this is what Christianity has done, and it really is evil, because Christianity says that you can sin, go to the altar, confess your sin, and be forgiven.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
Now, this is a grave disservice. People have bought it, and so they say, well, I'll just go and confess, and or maybe I won't even confess at all. I'll just take life at will, any time, anywhere I please.
Well, it's kind of like a Fat Tuesday, I guess, huh? Where you can go out and sin to your heart's delight, and then you've got to get real religious for a while, and it's apparently forgiven. Or sin on Saturday and confess on Sunday. I have always had a hard time buying that concept. Once you've committed something wrong, it seems to me expressing sorrow over that doesn't change it in the end, does it?
No, but we have a record of what happened, and Saint Germain has come to our rescue with his gift of the violet flame. And the violet flame of the Holy Spirit is actually an energy that transmutes our wrongs so that we don't have to keep carrying them. So what I'm going to be teaching this coming weekend is how to use mantras, how to use dynamic decrees to call forth a violet flame to transmute errors that you have made. I think all of us have known a moment in our lives when we were very unkind to someone.
You
we
bet.
We were angry, we got upset, we look back on ourselves and we say to ourselves, how could I have done this to this person?
Exactly.
And so along comes the Holy Spirit and dynamic decrees which we give, which in the science of the spoken word, we give mantras, and we call for the violet flame to transmute the karma we made in that unkind interchange.
What is the violet flame?
The violet flame is the flame of the Holy Spirit. It is the color of violet. Many of your listeners tonight may actually have someone there in their home, and they can see the aura around the person, the violet light around that person.
Oh, yes. Auras.
Yes. And so when the aura is in that level of the violet flame, it's highly attuned to the Holy Spirit.
All right. Take a good rest. We're at the top of the hour, and we'll be back shortly. And we'll be joined at that time by Los Angeles and San Francisco. My guest is Elizabeth Clare Prophet. It's going to be an interesting morning, so stay right where you are.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired April 10th, 1997.
My guest is somebody you may never have heard. You've probably heard of her, but in all likelihood, you've not heard her. This is your chance to do so. She is Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Coming up again in a moment. Back now to Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hi there, Elizabeth. May I ask you a little bit about the press? Now, for a long time, you did not do interviews. Now you're going to go back on the circuit again. And I'm wondering how you feel in your life you have been treated by the press, local in Montana, national, when you have said things, when you have been in the news. How would you rate your treatment by the press?
Oh, I would say it's capricious.
Hmm.
You know, now and then you get a good article, but you don't always. And depending on popular opinion and how much opinion there's going for you or against you, the press will follow the popular opinion. I've had very good articles in the Wall Street Journal, other international papers, and... When people are on to you and they feel that you're weak, then they move against you. When
uh-huh.
they feel that you're strong, then they don't move against you. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of an up and down thing. It's like the stock market, as you were saying.
Well, that's right. You had an interview not too long ago with 2020, and I thought they did something of a hatchet job on you. How did you feel about that?
Well, I have my PR department. And my man who takes care of the press, and I don't bother looking at that stuff.
So in other words, you even after the interview, you don't watch to see how much of you has been left on the cutting room floor.
No, I'm not interested. I am absolutely not interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
I am in communion with God. I do my job, and I can't just follow what, you know, people are going to say about me.
All right. After the suicides at Rancho Santa Fe,
mm-hmm.
Did you review any of the material from the Heaven's Gate website or any of the material about what these people believed?
I peripherally looked at it, turned it over to my staff who deals with these kinds of matters that have to do with touchy subjects that would reflect on us and so forth.
Sure.
And they do a really excellent job. I have a department, a PR department, devoted to it. Otherwise, you know, I could be called away every single day because of something somebody said in the newspaper.
Sure.
And I decided to just quit it. You know, I don't have to hear about these things.
I certainly
was concerned, very concerned about this event happening, however.
Of course.
There's no question about that.
All right. So that the audience might understand and I might understand, I read a lot of the Heaven's Gate material.
Yes.
And, frankly, there is not a lot of difference in terms of what they believed regarding planes of existence and some of what you talk about. What is the difference between the path that they took and the path that you are on?
On the path that I'm on, suicide is always unacceptable because it's taking God into your own hands. And that's what I feel is the downfall of anyone who takes his life.
I couldn't agree more. Otherwise, though, if you did a little bit of reading about their belief systems, they were not altogether on the wrong path, were they?
No.
How did they get on the wrong path? I mean, how do you think it happened? Do you have any idea how you get from where you are to where they went? What went wrong?
I came to the conclusion as I was pondering this subject this week that these people do not have enough of the God stuff in them to be centered in that flame in the heart to remain as individuals. It seems that at some point they gave up their independent identity and became one group who are all going to do the same thing and they're all going to go somewhere together. It's very odd to me that highly intelligent people cannot see the folly of their doings, and I had to conclude that they must not have spent much time meditating on the tremendous power that God has placed in the heart flame that beats on the altar of our heart from the time we're born to the time we leave. That is the heart flame of God. And when you have that, live that, walk and talk with God, you become very individualistic. You know, you go back to the prophets and to Moses and the great lights that have come down to us. These individuals are not going to be moved because there's 38 of them or there's 37 of them. These people are not moved because they have a separate identity. And these people seem to not have had a separate identity. They saw themselves as almost like a flank of birds, you know, one,
sure,
one whole.
All right, well, the lack of a separate identity is typical of the way people will describe the effect of somebody in a cult. And, of course, people have said that what you do amounts to a cult. I'm sure you argue with that. To me, it seems a cult, as opposed to a mainstream religion, only seems to be a difference in size. I can't quite figure it out. A cult is very difficult to define. But apparently, in the classic sense, you have just suggested that these people were in a cult, that they had no separate identity, and that was stripped from them. You do not teach that, do you?
I don't teach what?
You don't teach that. In other words, you don't, in your teachings, strip individual identities.
On the contrary, if you just look at the chart of the I Am Presence that is at our high altar, you see that each individual person who is a son or a daughter of God is centered in the Holy Spirit, centered in the mentor, the Holy Christ Self, centered in the threefold flame. And that empowerment comes from within. It doesn't just come from without. It comes from the deep knowing that we have a part to play in God.
Can people, right now, organized religion, except perhaps at the edges, is shrinking in size rapidly. And so it is reasonable then to ask whether it's possible for people to get back to God without returning to organized religion?
Well, you know, organized religion is kind of takes in the whole waterfront.
Sure.
Depending on who is the pastor, who is the teacher, who is the leader, whether that leader is up there carrying on histrionics and, you know, leading people astray, or whether you really have profound leaders who walk and talk with God daily, who listen to the inner voice, who obey that inner voice. These people are the ones we want to follow.
You have spoken with and transcribed messages from ascended masters. What can you actually tell us, if anything, about what the future holds for us, for humanity, for our world? What do you know of, in other words?
In terms of the future, God has given every individual on earth free will.
Free will.
And these souls who took their lives also had that option of free will. Now, if they saw their free will as identical with the free will of their leader, and there was no clearly defined border of who I am and who the next guy is, that to me is what leads to, like, a colony of mushrooms that are all in one piece, instead of having a separate identity and saying, I want to live, you know, even saying it at
sure.
the last minute, no, I'm
sure.
not going to take this drug or whatever it is,
sure.
because I want life, not death. And they didn't seem to have it.
Well, my question, though, goes now more to what you think is in store for us. I guess you have been handed some information, hopefully, I guess you have, that we don't have, regarding our future. Can you tell us what you know?
I think that the future can be bright if we walk in the footsteps of the great religious reformers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we decide to go into drugs and allow our children to do so, we allow our civilization to go down.
Exactly.
And we don't fight for the rights of our children to
exactly.
be who and what they are. We don't fight to get heroin and drugs out of the schools. If we aren't really fighting, we will see the consequences of our actions. I believe God has given us free will. We have to take that free will and use it wisely, see what's happening, band together with our neighbors, and work for the betterment of our youth.
Well, that's what ought to happen, but Elizabeth, that doesn't seem to me to be happening.
It happens in many places where there is a wholeness, where there is the green shoot, where there is life. There are many communities around our nation and around the world where people really do have a solid family core, and where they are not losing and going down the mudslide of civilization.
Is that why you established what you have established in Montana to be a green shoot in the middle of a bunch of brown weeds?
I think that this came about when my husband, the night before he passed on, Mark Prophet, who founded this organization, told me that I should move my headquarters to Montana. So I followed his instruction and we moved here.
Did he tell you why?
He felt that we would be facing many challenges, especially in the 1990s, crossing over into the year 2000,
mm-hmm.
that we could be seeing war again, perhaps a third world war. We could see nuclear weapons. We could see a breakdown in society. We could see the problems of our military, that they do not realize that we must have defense, even though we don't. We may never use that defense. We need to have that defense in place. We know that Russia is still building armaments and weapons.
As a matter of fact, there's a story that ran yesterday in a lot of papers that the Russians, for whatever indiscernible reason, are building very deep bomb shelters. Now, that doesn't sound to me like a nation that's thinking war is all gone and over and nothing to worry about. They're building very deep shelters in Russia.
Well, they have been building them for many, many years. I would say at least since the end of World War II. So the Russians mean business, and they are building those shelters because they are determined that they are not going to be the ones that are going to lose this fight. And the Russians believe that he who hits first is the victor.
Well, they may be right.
Yes, they may.
Or perhaps everybody is the victim. However, they've decided that at least some of them, no doubt the elite, shall survive. And to some degree, then, it is fair to say that what you have built in Montana is your own, what your ex-husband, your former husband, told you to do.
To build our shelters, to be prepared to survive. So many people today in the United States say, well, why should we do anything? Because we don't want to be here. We don't want to be in a world that's had a Holocaust and all of this fallout on our heads, on our houses, on our people. So we're not going to worry about building shelters. We're not going to worry about the future because we don't want to be around.
Wouldn't want to be in a world with a bunch of dying people and radiation all over the place, that sort of thing.
And so we then decided to say, okay, we're going to choose life, not death. And life may entail that we be underground for a number of weeks if there are nuclear weapons that come across the United States. And after that, and after the fallout settles and we come out, we have prepared our seed. We've prepared those things that we can grow. We're prepared to till the earth. We're prepared to survive because we believe it's our responsibility to live and to send forth our posterity to once again recreate this world the way God intended it to be. And the United States government is not providing what the Russian government is providing for its people.
No, it's true they're not. And it's reasonable to ask why the Russians are doing this if they show, you know, if it's going to be war no more. So I tend to agree with you. Do you have any sense of when this might come? Where it might start? I mean, do we look at Israel in the Middle East, as so many people believe? Is there a way that people can know the time is drawing near?
I think the time is drawing near, and I think while this time is drawing near, the most important means we have of change is transmutation by the violet flame of the Holy Spirit. And if you'd like, I'll be happy to give you an example.
Please.
What a violet flame decree is about.
Yes, please, do.
Okay, this decree is called, I am the violet flame. When we use the name of God, I am, we are saying, God in me is. God in me is the violet flame. So this is how I would give this dynamic decree. I am the violet flame, in action in me now. I am the violet flame, to light alone I bow. I am the violet flame in mighty cosmic power. I am the light of God, shining every hour. I am the violet flame, blazing like a sun. I am God's sacred power, freeing everyone. That's a simple decree. The energy comes from the I Am presence. We are directing the violet flame into action in our being. We bow to the light. We invoke the cosmic power of God. We visualize ourselves in a blazing sun, and we call for the freedom of everyone.
So, you are not what happened in Rancho Santa Fe. You are not a group of people prepared to bring upon their own apocalypse, which is what I think eventually occurs to most cults who feel it's on the way. When it doesn't arrive, they then create their own, bring upon their own. You are simply saying that you are preparing for what you believe is coming, and if it does not come in your lifetimes, that's just fine, but you vote for life, not death.
That's right. And that's what Moses said on his deathbed. He said to the children of Israel, choose life, not death.
You are going to be speaking, I think, in San Diego shortly, aren't you?
Yes, I am speaking in San Diego.
April 12th and 13th at the, Wyndham Emerald Plaza Hotel, is that correct?
That's right.
How do people find out about that?
Well, our seminar is April 12th, Saturday, and April 13th, Sunday. from 1 to 6 p.m. on both days at the Wyndham Emerald Plaza Hotel in the Crystal Ballrooms 1 and 2. That address is 400 West Broadway, downtown, on West Broadway and Columbia Street in San Diego.
Why have you decided to go back on the circuit, to go back on the air? You've written a book suddenly?
Yes, I've written my book.
And suddenly you're very public again. What changed? Why did you decide to do that?
Because I feel that we have a window of opportunity for 3 years or less to give people a real spiritual dimension and a Holy Spirit-centered life where no matter what happens to them, whether we go into a golden age or whether we see a period of great darkness, that the people I talk to, that I give that empowerment to, of the science of the spoken word, that they will have something to hang on to no matter what happens in this world, in the United States, in the whole planet.
Do you think, in fact, life will go on? I visualize a change, and I don't know what it is, whether it is a gigantic spiritual event, a physical event like a war. I have no idea. I just know we're racing towards something, and it seems to me there will be something on the other side of that. It's not the end of the world, but there's going to be a big change, isn't there?
I think so. I think that life will go on, but it may go on quite differently, and I think it depends how much prayer force we bring to the altars of our churches, our synagogues, our mosques, our temples.
All right. Elizabeth, stand by. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back, and I will take some calls, or Elizabeth, well, I guess I should say.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
It is indeed, and I'm not sure we're ever going back where we came from. But I guess that's the eternal struggle, isn't it? Once again, back to Elizabeth Clare Prophet. And Elizabeth,
yes.
I would like to ask you kind of an off-the-wall question. I am very definitely married to my soulmate. It's not something that I had to consider. I knew it instantly, and I've known it ever since. How do people find that person out there that really is their soulmate? There's a lot of people on the planet right now. How do you go about searching out that person who is right for you?
I think if you clear your aura and the aura of the etheric mental, physical, and desire body, if you make yourself a clear transparency, it's almost like you're a lighthouse. You have the light going out from you, and your soulmate may recognize it from the other side of the world. It's almost like when looking for one's soulmate, you almost have to be a sleuth because there's so many millions of people in the world, but truly, what God does is he brings together those whom he desires to bring together, and many, many people have married as soulmates.
So So then it's something you have to do. It's not like going out and just searching and searching and searching or bar hopping or whatever it is people do to try to find a mate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that comes from you and is then recognized and it just happens.
I think it happens. You know, I believe love on in love at first sight. I think you can recognize your soulmate the moment you see him or her.
Exactly. I do too. I experience that. Could you explain to the audience just who Saint Germain is? Who is he? What is his role? That sort of thing.
Each one of the ages, the 2,000-year periods that we're talking about as ages, there is a ruling hierarch of that age who carries a specific claim. And the hierarch of the age of Aquarius is Saint Germain. And there are angels and legions of light, all of whom serve him on that seventh ray of Aquarius. So it is his time to rule the world for that 2,000-year period. Saint Germain was embodied as Francis Bacon. He was embodied as the prophet Samuel. He had tremendous skills and ability in the French courts. He could change metals into gold. He was known as the Wonder Man of Europe. He made his ascension several hundred years ago. And he is the one who will guide us through this 2,000-year period, and he is greatly beloved by his students throughout the world.
And has Saint Germain told you, and I mean you, not your late husband only, but yourself as well, what is just ahead for our world, this transition?
I think that if we all recognize that we are facing major challenges in our homes, in industry, all over the world, in our government. And we can meet those challenges by praying daily. We can set aside 15 minutes or 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
give a few mantras to the violet flame to bring that into our households. That can make the difference. We need to realize that we need Saint Germain. He's here for us, and we have to call to him. We have to say, beloved Saint Germain, help us to right this planet. Help our families. Help our children, help the world. And we have to implore on our knees before God that God might give us intercession through Saint Germain, through other saints in heaven. We have to be a part of the process, and we can't give up. We have to work as hard as we can to make this happen, to turn around the darkness of the world. And if it comes upon us, then we can say to our posterity, we tried, we gave it our best.
Sure.
This is what we were able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. In Montana, do your neighbors understand you for the most part or misunderstand your message and what you're saying for the most part?
Well, we've had the Royal Teton Ranch since 1981 when we purchased it, and it's now 1997. So our neighbors, the people in Montana, the people in the capital and so forth, they've gotten to know us. And we get along very well with the people of Montana for the most part.
All right. I'd like to let a few in the audience ask you questions, if you would not mind.
That's fine.
All right. Let's give it a try. First time caller line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
Columbus, Ohio.
Welcome.
Welcome. God bless you, Elizabeth Claire Prophet. I have a question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You've obviously admitted that you didn't get to where you wanted to go and everybody wants to go the first route. Maybe before that you had other experiences in reincarnation. I believe that, and that's true. Now, for your people that are people, everyone that's listening, tell them how they would know if they're new or if they've been struggling for thousands of years.
Well, that's an interesting question. Yes, how do you know where you are in the process, Elizabeth?
Well, are you saying, are you talking about a brand new soul?
Yes.
That hasn't incarnated before versus someone who's been here thousands of years?
Yeah, sure. Have I been around a lot of times previously, or am I relatively new at all this? How would you know?
Well, there are certain indicators that you see. First of all, the first root races, as they are called, never did sin. So they were on the planet for 14,000 years each F-series of 14,000 years, and they fulfilled their reason for being on planet Earth, and they moved on. Then came the fourth and fifth and sixth root races. And they got enmired with the fallen angels and the war that happened between Mars and Maldek and the planet Earth. And these individuals have occupied the Earth since that time. And this is why we have good and evil, because the bad intentions of many visitors who have come to planet have played themselves out over many centuries. And therefore, we are in the grips of fallen angels and aliens who move against our children, who are tools for drugs, for tearing civilization down, for causing the burdens in people's bodies that have to do with why they're mentally ill, why they are physically ill.
Mm-hmm. But again, an individual, is there a way that a listener, for example, can discern whether they're a newbie or whether they've been around for a long time? Is there some way to discern that individually?
Well, if you look at the sixth root race, it's the most recent root race to have embodied. These, for the most part, are the Christian civilization of our world. And many times these souls are trusting. They love Jesus. He is the only avatar that they have known. They follow him with all their hearts under many denominations. They're sincere. They're servants of God, but they may not quite have a background of remembrance of past ages. They may never have been on Atlantis. They may never have been in Lemuria. And so, compared to those who have, these souls are young souls.
Huh.
So they have less experience, and their life is more simple. They see things more simply rather than so complex. And for many Christians, the goal is to attain union with Jesus Christ, to be saved by him, and to enter the heaven world. And, of course, according to what they've been taught, reincarnation does not exist for them.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Good morning.
Good morning.
Where are you?
Seattle.
Seattle, okay.
I had a question when you were talking about suicide and the souls being stuck, and then you said that it would be hard to find the mothers. Well, I would like to have another child, and I have friends that are hoping to have more children, and that was, I was wondering what, if you could explain that.
Well, if you want to have children and you can't have children, it's important to pray to God and ask God and his angels to intercede in your behalf and to give you a soul who is compatible with your family and whom God wishes to place there. I would put it in the hands of God rather than to volunteer for such and such a soul that you really do not even know. God assigns the souls that he sends to us, and he does a very good job of it. So we should take what he sends us in terms of our bearing our children.
All right. We talked, Elizabeth, about cloning, and you said that a clone may well not have a soul because that's given by God, not man.
That's true.
Therefore, is science a blessing as well as a great danger for us? Is there a danger in the path we're on right now scientifically?
Well, for one thing, we don't know, but what scientists of Atlantis were already cloning before Atlantis sank.
That's true.
And the products of these clones could have gone off of Atlantis to other areas, such as Greece and the Mediterranean areas. And for all we know, we may be walking around and rubbing elbows with people who were created by Atlantean scientists and have come down the chain of evolution and are here on Earth. And we call them soulless ones.
You said something that I would like to try and understand. You said that a lot of the new souls would be the pure people.
They're younger souls.
Younger souls.
They haven't had as much time to make negative karma as people who've been here longer.
Right. My traditional understanding of reincarnation was that you get it better, or you're supposed to be trying to get it better each time. But the way you've explained it seems to suggest that the older souls are the more evil of the souls. They have had time to learn the evil ways. Or is it is there a great curve where a soul becomes more evil and then begins to correct for that with karma?
I don't distinguish quantities of karma between those of who have been on the earth longer as opposed to those who have been on the earth at a lesser length of time. What I'm saying here is that if you come in as a younger soul because you have reincarnated for the first time mm-hmm. in the Piscean age, that mm-hmm. gives you 2,000 years period of having been on earth if you began to be born during this Piscean age. So what we're saying here is souls are younger. They may have less experience. They may have less development in certain areas. It's not a question of good and bad so much as it is what is their momentum of service to God and what is their momentum to service to life.
Okay.
So,
all right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi, where are you, please?
I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
I became familiar with Ms. Prophet's teachings many years ago, and I still, every day, I decree, and I've been able to overcome tobacco and alcohol, and I've got a little bit of cold right now, but I'm a very joyful person. I want to honor Ms. Prophet's courage to come back out at this time and with her teachings of the Masters, and because it is so difficult right now with all this cult stuff and everything. It's so difficult for authentic teachings to get through to the people. And I know she has taken more flack.
Oh, yes.
Which speaks to me that she must have something going for herself to take this much flack, you know.
Well, sir, as you well know, I've been in that bucket here recently, too, and there's something I've noticed. And that is, and I wonder if you have, Elizabeth, that the media, for the most part, decides what the story is going to be, and then most times they don't let the facts get in their way of telling that story the way they want it to be. If they have decided that Elizabeth Claire Prophet or anybody else is a cult leader, by gosh, they're going to tell that story no matter what. Do you see that?
Do I see that? I've seen it for years. Seen it for years.
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
I just don't pay any attention to it. I know who I am, where I'm going, and I know what I can do for people, and that's my passion and my mission.
And your reason for being here is not so much to refute that. You've stopped doing that a long time ago, but merely to get your message out.
That's right. I have a message for those who want it. I'm not pushing it on anyone, but I have a wonderful message of the Holy Spirit and the violet flame, and I want to shout it from the housetops.
You don't, your group does not kidnap people, does not brainwash people, does not lead them down the path as we hear of cults like this one with Heaven's Gate and so forth. None of that goes on, does it?
Nothing of the kind. You're free to come here, enjoy our teachings, read our books, decide you don't want to stay, be on your way with our blessing and love, come see us again. You know, we just want to help people who want to be helped.
Fair enough. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi.
Hi.
Hello, where are you?
San Francisco area.
Okay, you're going to have to speak up good and loud for us.
San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes.
And I've been a seeker of truth all my life and studied religions, and I studied first Episcopalian, then Christian Science, and then I found these books by Elizabeth Claire Prophet at Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
And I started studying them, and I found them to be very full of very loving energy and, I think, very spiritual, and I found there were ways in which there was much to learn about what the purpose of life is. And, you know, it's too bad that we have to try to put Mrs. Prophet through some kind of sieve and litmus test about, you know, are you crazy and do you have a cult and do they do suicides and drugs and this and that, because I think the media has specialized in perversity. And the story about Mary Baker Eddy is similar, because when she discovered, you know, Christian Science, which said, you know, people can heal themselves. Jesus healed himself, and therefore you can too. And she taught that. She was attacked from every single quarter on earth. It seems like we're in a spiritual warfare where people are attacked if they have a message of love and healing and they just want to help others, because it seems like this seems to be the dawn of the real hardening of heart. It's warned in the Bible that, you know, the worst thing is the hardening of heart, and we all seem to be getting that way toward one another because of media sensationalism. So, you know, I would like to ask Mrs. Prophet, you know, what she would recommend is a book which someone might go to the bookstore and pick up just to investigate what your teachings are. Which book do you think they could start with?
All right, that's a good question. You have written many books. Which would you recommend as a beginner?
I would recommend the book that I have just recently finished, Reincarnation, The Missing Link in Christianity, because Christians are truly missing the link that they could have with God if they really understood what Christ's message was and is.
Exactly how did that message get removed?
Well, as we were saying earlier, the Council of Nicaea, the situation of removing reincarnation because it was a threat to the church hierarchy, because the people would not have to toe the line. They knew that they were going to re-embody. So reincarnation is pivotal, and if we don't understand it, we don't know it, what we do is we sin, and we think that somebody else is going to take care of it. So we're non-accountable. We're non-accountable, and that's a real problem.
It is a very serious problem, and I've always felt it myself that, gosh, you can't just simply be absolved of wrongdoing, that whatever good or bad you do in life hangs with you throughout your life, and if one believes in reincarnation, in future lives.
Exactly.
So I think I do. I definitely believe that. It makes more sense than somebody being absolved just like that. And I know that flies in the face of a lot of contemporary Christian teaching, and it makes a lot of fundamentalists very angry to hear the kind of thing you're saying, because they believe, why, anything I can do can be forgiven. So how do you deal with that anger when you meet it?
When I meet that anger in people?
Yes.
Well, I have no desire to be angry with people whatsoever. I have no desire to argue with them.
I can tell that. I meant when they come at you that way.
When they come at me that way, I just listen to what they have to say. And I don't try to change their minds, because most people come with a mindset.
Yes.
And only they can change their mindset. I pray for them that through the Holy Spirit, maybe they may become liberated. And truly not have this burden where they feel they have to argue religion. I think it's a sin against Jesus Christ to argue religion.
I do too. Elizabeth, we're at the top of an hour. Can you spend one more?
I'll give it a try.
Give it a try. All right. It sounds like you might be... Have you been doing a lot of talking?
Quite a bit of talking,
quite,
yes. And I caught the same cold that my son got. He's going on 3 years old.
Uh-huh. They're little germ carriers, Elizabeth. All right, stay right there. My guest is Elizabeth Clare Prophet. A bit of a cold, but I bet she makes it.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
It is a rare opportunity indeed. My guest is Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She's got a bit of a cold, but if you'll sit and listen with an open mind, you actually might hear something. I know there's a lot of seething going on out there because I know how people react to ideas that they do not agree with. But it is healthy, folks, to listen. Very healthy. All right, back now to a very rare opportunity to speak with Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Just a couple of more questions.
Okay.
I know you're starting to run out of gas, and I don't blame you. It's getting late in the morning. We talked about suicide.
Yes.
Quite extensively.
Mm-hmm.
What about, here's a really hard question, what about the other way around? In other words, when somebody has murdered, taken life in a premeditated manner, our society takes their life. How do you look at that?
I look at it in two ways. Sometimes it's necessary to be in jail, to be in a penitentiary for a long time, for life, let's say.
Right.
But on the other hand, you have a situation where a person is sent to the electric chair for murder.
Exactly.
They could be in their 20s. Because I believe in reincarnation, I see that if that person has received this judgment, that person could be in embodiment within a year or 2 years or 3 years as a baby in someone's womb who will come forth, grow to maturity, and will have to deal with that karma. Now, if you let him rot in jail between his 20s and he's 80 years old, it's a total waste. With reincarnation, he gets to come back again, re-embody again, meet the person that he murdered, have a resolution between the two, if indeed they can reach that plane of brotherly love, and the one who was the victim and the one who was the murderer can move on now.
Oh, that's very interesting. So, in other words, somebody who has been, say, electrocuted, does not, as a suicide, remain bound here.
Well, he's not a suicide because he...
Right.
He is not willingly going. He was put in the electric chair.
Exactly. Oh,
yeah.
very interesting.
So, to me, you see, to let people rot away in jail to finally pass on in their late years, then finally get to be born again, you're talking about maybe 50 years of a person's life and of institutions having to support people, whereas these people are going nowhere, and they get into a lot of trouble in jail, in any case.
They absolutely do, and learn to be better criminals in a lot of cases.
I think that is a tremendous gift that God showed me many years ago, that it's better to move on when you make a major mistake. It's better that you take your punishment, come back, and try harder.
All right. Can I ask you a couple of hard questions?
Sure.
All right. Let me read you a fax I got, and I'm not familiar with this, so I'll just read it, and you can respond if you will. Good evening, Art. Elizabeth Clare Prophet and her church is responsible for the slaughter of nearly two-thirds of the Yellowstone National Park bison herd, which were following their normal migration patterns in search of food this winter. There is no, quote, in quotes, love in her heart for God's creatures. She is not being honest when she tells you of her love. Please ask her why she is calling for the slaughter of the Yellowstone bison herd.
I am not calling for the slaughter of the Yellowstone bison herd in any way, shape, or form.
Why do you think Pam in Eugene, Oregon, has come to the conclusion that you have? Or
well,
that...
in past years, what has happened is, through perhaps not necessarily handling the situation the best, the Yellowstone Park has allowed multitudes of bison to come through onto our properties. Then they have to be killed on our properties, and it becomes a tremendous mess. And so what has happened is the Yellowstone Park has become more accountable to the situation of the bison, and many bison were outside the park, not necessarily on our property this winter. They've been all over Gardner,
all over the roads, all over the highways. They've been everywhere.
There is also a disease problem, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it's brucellosis, and that affects our cattle. And our cattle is on our ranch, and that cattle produces their young. And if the bison get near them, our cattle can be compromised by the brucellosis of the bison. I think that the herd in Yellowstone Park should be reduced to accommodate all the bison that should be in that park, so they don't need to exit the park and come on private property, and then put that in the hands of the ranchers that then have to deal with a question when it's not even our problem.
Okay. hard question number two, and I don't really think this one's so hard. On your ranch, it is said you have quite a stock of weapons. Now, I have no problem with that, Elizabeth. I have a fair stock of weapons myself. I live in a very isolated area, and frankly, the authorities who might help me if I got in trouble would arrive probably in time to draw a chalk line around my body on the floor, not to help me get out of the trouble. I'm going to have to depend on myself to do that, and so I do. But people will, of course, look at your accumulation of weapons and attach really dire meaning to it.
Well, first of all, what I want to tell you is that according to the Constitution, people have the right to bear arms.
You betcha.
The people who live in our community and are a part of our ranch are free to own guns as they see fit as private citizens of the United States. The church itself does not stock weapons. Individuals may do so if they are concerned that we may have a nuclear war, not the scenario we've been discussing this evening.
Right.
They want to be able to protect their families and their homes. And they live all up and down the Paradise Valley in a long stretch of mileage. And most people in Montana, you will find, hunt.
You bet.
And they have their private weapons, which I don't think is any of my business or anybody else's business.
I couldn't agree with you more. And so then the guns that are possessed, not by your church, but by the individuals who are part of it, might conceivably be used if the worst occurred, if this change, and by the way, you may have heard at the beginning of the hour, and I want to ask you, have you noted that whether it's a Native American or a Catholic priest or a prophet or Elizabeth Clare prophet or so many, many others, through different venues and visions and avenues, you all seem to be saying about the same thing, and that is that we are rushing toward a change. So are there other paths, Elizabeth, that are valid and see and are able to see the same things that you have been shown?
I think that the mystics of the world in every one of the major world religions have a deep contact with God. And I think that people in the outer circles of religion also have a contact with God. And each of us needs to position ourselves in that place where we feel we can do the best by communing with God and then going out and helping people who really need us. They need us physically. They need us to help us with their children, to help us with drugs, to face this and that challenge. And
so then you don't hold yourself out as the only conduit to what's ahead.
Every single person on earth has a conduit directly to God. They don't need me as an intercessor.
Well, I hope the audience is sitting out there and really hearing this, and I trust a lot of my audience is. First-time caller line, you're on the air with
Do the Wild Thing at 702-727-1295.
My friend, that's the one thing I can't let you do. Please do not give your last name on the air.
Okay.
So let's try it again. Just give us your first name and where you are.
My name is Chris. I'm from Houston, Texas.
Yes, sir.
The whole spiritual thing, it goes a lot deeper, and there's a lot bigger picture than what I've been hearing tonight. And
in what sense?
The spiritual sense. There's a lot of years, I guess you can call them witch cults or whatever, but there's a universal understanding of life, and it's called spiritualism. And it deals with everything that lives and grows, lives off the same energy. And it's, you know, it's the same energy that the grass grows from, that puppies are born from, that everything that lives and moves, it comes from some energy, and it exists throughout the universe. It's called nature. And a lot of people misinterpret it for God. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's not somebody there that guides us.
Why do you think there is some great difference, sir, between what you might call nature and I might call God?
Well, I'm not saying there's a big difference. I'm saying that...
In other words, what I was saying a moment ago, Elizabeth, I don't mean to leave you out of this, but I mean there are many conduits to the same message, to the same place.
That's right.
It's all the same.
It's all the same. So we really, I think, have no argument. Do you agree, Elizabeth?
I agree.
All right. I think that's right. A wild card line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
Am I on?
Yes, yes.
Cool. My name is Russell. I'm from Southern California. Right now I'm in Santa Monica.
Okay.
I'm in the prayer, and I think it's almost synchronistic that you were just talking about how If you have to go to the bathroom a lot at night, it's your prostate enlarged and all that stuff, in one of your ads.
Yes.
My father is in a hospital right now, and he was getting his prostate shaved, and they had complications, and they punctured his bladder, made all kinds of mistakes, and it's a mess.
Yes.
So I've noticed that, you know, I do prayer, and my prayers have become intense, and I'm noticing that it's working for me, and I'm convinced prayer is it. So I'm interested in this, like, violet flame stuff and these decrees that Prophet's talking about. And I wanted to ask her if she could, like, elucidate on that a bit. Or, like,
all right, sure, sure.
And you know, I also have a friend here who has a question, too.
Well,
is that okay?
one at a time.
Okay.
All right? Your question is a good one. He wants more about the violet flame. He wants to understand that.
Well, may I give another mantra?
Please.
Okay, this one is called The Living Flame of Cosmic Freedom. It says, I am the immortal flame of cosmic freedom. I demand that all of my energies in outer concentration submit to the great God flame within my heart. I demand that all outer conditions come within effective God control. I demand that all that is not of the light be transmuted and changed, and that I be the fullness of all that which I already am. For I am the full perfection of God. I am the living flame of cosmic freedom. I am the buoyant, dancing joy of God that passes through my entire four lower bodies and descends from the heart of my presence to give me my freedom now. I am the raising power of the Spirit of light and fire, which lifts me to the victory of my ascension and is the full gathered momentum of victory of the saints and ascended beings of all ages to ascend back to the very heart of God and the immortal consciousness thereof. So help me, God.
So there you are, sir.
That's great. So I can see how that would work perfect for me. But what about when I apply it for, like, nuclear war and stuff like that? Like, I don't want it to happen.
In other words, what can you do to prevent what seems
is it,
to be...
Is it because, like,
what seems
am I becoming
to be the inevitable?
So much greater?
All right. What can he do?
I always go back to the power of the spoken word so that I have set in the ethers around me exactly what I want to have happen and come into physical manifestation. So if I'm going to deal with nuclear war, I would take another mantra from Saint Germain and see if you can visualize how this looks around you.
All right.
I am the light of the heart, shining in the darkness of being and changing all into the golden treasury of the mind of Christ. I am projecting my love out into the world to erase all errors and to break down all barriers. I am the power of infinite love, amplifying itself until it is victorious, world without end.
How would you apply that? I sat trying to think of how that would apply to nuclear war, for example.
Because when we put a shield of light around us, the light of our hearts, the manifestation of the mind of Christ, and we call for the breaking down of all barriers, we call for the power of infinite love, that is energy we'd qualify that energy with a very specific code, and the code are the sequences of the words of the mantra itself. So every syllable of a mantra carries energy. So when you want to accomplish turning back nuclear war, you start with this nucleus of the light of the heart that comes from the I am that I am that God revealed to Moses. So we go back to our source. We call God to send down shafts of white light. Then we give a mantra that anchors it into the physical octave in our bodies and in the situation of your father's prostate.
All right. You seem so positive on life, Elizabeth. You're obviously positive on life. It's a message that I think the masses have missed about you, because the press never listens to that. They only seem to want to concentrate on trying to portray you as a cult leader. They never seem to listen to what we're hearing tonight. And so I'm glad we've been able to hear it. What is your best assessment? You're certainly optimistic about what we can try and avoid, how we can try to avoid it, but does it seem increasingly inevitable to you?
I hate to hear the word inevitability, because it almost becomes a prediction. You know, whatever we affirm, we become
self-fulfilling.
So I'm one of this person that never says die. I'm going to work and work and try to help God and all of the people that I know to come into a higher alignment with the reality of the universe.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Hello, where are you, please?
Donnie in Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yes, sir?
Okay. Mr. Bell and Ms. Prophet, okay, I've been listening tonight, and in the past, I have had myself gone through with my family, my entire family, as a matter of fact, classes that we were taught spiritualism, I guess, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, astral projection and reincarnation and all these things, okay? And, you know, here in the past couple of years, I have switched over to Catholicism, okay? And, you know, one of the questions, I really have two questions for Ms. Parker.
Well, we've only got time for one quick one, sir, so give us your best shot.
Okay, all right, best shot. All right, but in the Bible, you know, I notice that she mixes a lot of Bible with what she's teaching.
Yes.
Right? And the Bible talks about, for by grace are you saved through faith, all right? That not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast, okay? And what I want to key on there is not of works, all right? Well, reincarnation really teaches works. But all I'm looking for is truth, right? And I've been listening with a really open mind, and I want to hear what she has to say about, you know, the working part of it.
All right. We will tackle again reincarnation and the Bible when we get back. My guest is Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and we're at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question, we've got the phone lines. I think that's how it works. This is Talk Radio. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide her towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting after you.
Mm-hmm.
Mirror Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired April 10th, 1997.
Indeed it is. And I wonder if you've been listening, if Elizabeth Clare Prophet is what you thought she would be. Does she fit into the mold that the media has been serving up to you for years or not? First time caller line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Good morning. Where are you, please?
Good morning. Calling from Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, all right.
Art, I really love your show. I have a lot of converts. We listen to you religiously.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, I believe you are well-intentioned. However, I believe you are rewriting the gospel, the Christian gospel, using bits and pieces to suit your own beliefs. And I know this will sound very strong. I think you are being misled by deceiving spirits, which the Bible warns against time and time again.
All right. Go ahead and answer that, Elizabeth.
Well, I would say to her that I understand her concerns, but the scriptures also say, judge not lest ye be judged. Mm. And in a sense, you, the caller, are judging me when you don't know what is in my heart or in the innermost recesses of my being.
Well,
I don't really see how you can make a judgment of me simply because of this doctrine or that doctrine. There's more to me than just doctrine.
I'm sure there is. One thing that is clear to me, Elizabeth, after listening to you this morning, is that what the popular press has made you out to be is definitely not what you are at all. Whatever you are, you certainly are not what they say you are, and I hope that that's come clear to my listeners this morning. I suspect it has, those who have really listened. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Hi.
Hi. I'm on the air?
You are. Where?
My name is Julie. I'm calling from West L.A.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Elizabeth. I've just recently been exposed to your teaching, so it's really a joy to talk to you. My question is that it makes sense to me that we're all energy, and so by invoking a vibration or a color to create change within ourselves or outside of ourselves with these kind of affirmations, that makes sense. When I'm looking at these decrees, I'm a little overwhelmed with the number of them and some of the words are unfamiliar, and I think it's important to come from the heart. How do you know when you're really there, how long does it take, or what do you have to do to make sure that you're really coming from the place that's going to create that transformation in your life or in the lives of, things that are important outside of ourselves?
Well, you can go to the Minneapolis Teaching Center and get some booklets on decrees, like angel booklets on how to decree for certain things. How do you know when you've accomplished it? Because you feel the Holy Spirit upon you. Because you feel that through your prayers and your communion with God, you've come to a new plane of oneness with that Spirit. And I think you come to recognize it after you've decreed and given the type of signs of the spoken word that we do. You get to recognize and you know when you have accomplished that goal.
That self-doubt melts away?
It sure does.
How long does that take?
Just do it every day. Just get up in the morning and thank God that you don't have to have doubt and fear, because He loves you and He will give you the fearlessness flame. Call for the fearlessness flame.
The fearlessness.
Call for the binding of all doubt and fear in your life.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Hi.
Yes, I'm calling from Michigan.
Yes, sir.
And before she gets off the air, sir, if you could get an 800 number or a phone number to order her book, that would be appreciated.
Well, I'll bet her book is available at Barnes & Noble.
Oh,
that's right. Any Barnes & Noble across the country.
Okay. And my question has to do with I come from a Catholic background, pretty much, sad to say, but true, I've pretty much turned my back on that. And if to say something to me in the lines of what would you recommend for somebody to get back into a spiritual belief, not so much the Catholic belief. But
well, maybe you can answer your own question, sir. Why have you turned your back on Catholicism?
Well, I just felt that the Catholic Church, so to speak, as an organization, was something hollow was there, something wasn't true, something was unfulfilling, wasn't enough. There's more to it than what they had to offer. That's just what was my feelings. And, I just pretty much trotted along, up till the last little while, I figured there must be more, you know, how do you get to a more spiritual feeling? What would you recommend?
Well, I would suggest that you take up the teachings of the Ascended Masters so that you can come to the realization that so much has been taken out of Christianity that we have a watered-down religion that is not going to be able to serve us when we have to fight a battle of Armageddon, whether within ourselves or on a planetary scale. And I think that that's what happened at the Council of Nicaea, that we lost reincarnation, so we lost our reason for being.
Elizabeth, are there writings that live today that document what originally was in the Bible with regard to reincarnation? Are there actual writings?
Well, you know, the main one that we look to is the Elijah come again story. That's what we look to because that's what Jesus told his disciples. A lot has been cut out of the Bible. Scholars themselves are not certain. So I think that when you get to the Nag Hammadi texts and other documents that have been found, such as the Dead Sea Scrolls, you begin to get an entirely different take on Christianity, one that is strong, one that is hopeful, one that is full of love, compassion, and peace toward others.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi.
Yeah, hi. This is Richard and Eugene.
Hello, Richard.
Yeah, good morning and bless you both. Elizabeth, you mentioned your ranch in Montana. I was just wondering where that might be, and you said it could be visited.
That's right. We're at the northern entrance to Yellowstone Park. The town is Gardner, Montana.
Gardner.
Yeah, Gardner, Montana, and we have 8 miles of river, Yellowstone River, on our property, as well as 5 miles of continuous border with Yellowstone Park.
Oh.
It's magnificent.
Is there a number, a phone number?
Yeah, a phone number. Phone number is 406-848-7441.
Wait a minute. Everybody's scrambling for pens. That's 406.
I can give you my 800 number, 1-800-437-3366.
3366?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's 1-800-437-3366.
And people are welcome to come and visit and take part if
they like.
You're
most welcome, and we'd like to see you there.
Great.
You can also visit us on our website with www.psl.org.
All right, and if it will help, caller, if you're used to going to my website, we have a link up there right now to Elizabeth Claire Prophet's website.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And I also took the trouble to scan a very, very nice, flattering, I thought, black and white photograph of you, Elizabeth, and put that on the website as well.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
We're almost done. Hang in there. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi.
Oh, hello.
Where are you?
I'm from Boise, Idaho.
Okay.
And I want to go to bed, but I wanted to talk.
Well, that puts you in the category with several others, I'm sure.
How many are there before me?
Go right ahead. Ask a question.
Oh, okay. First of all, I just wanted to say hi to Art, and that it seems like I've known Art all this time only because I listened to his tapes. My husband works day and night, and he records them. Anyway, I just wanted to tell Elizabeth Claire Prophet that I am grateful that she was interviewed, and also that Art's wishes, you know, came true.
Well,
I'm originally from South America, but I'm living here in Boise, and I just like to testify the Violet Flame. I found the teachings in 1977, and this is 97, so I think it's been 20 years. My children grew up over there, and, you know, I served on staff for almost 12 years, and I could really testify, you know, with the Violet Flames and Saint Germain. And I just wanted to share this with all the audience, which I consider my brothers and sisters out there listening, that they should try to give it a try.
Well, so, at least hold an open mind and listen, and with an open mind. And when you do that, you're liable to actually hear something and learn something and be surprised that what you thought was true perhaps is not. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Elizabeth Claire Prophet. Hi.
Yes, how you doing, Art?
Fine, sir.
Elizabeth, I had a question as far as in Hebrews it talks about it's appointed to man once to die and then the judgment. As far as your beliefs in reincarnation, how do you take that scripture?
I take that scripture to mean that we are given once to live, and we are given many times to live, and when we are called home, we go through the resurrection. You see, this goes along with canceling out the Council of Nicaea. You come to the place here, it is given man once to die. Well, we know that it is not given to man once to die because we know the law of reincarnation.
But you say that scripture is untrue then, right?
I wouldn't say that it is untrue. I think you and I have differing understandings of that scripture.
Okay, then. Okay, thanks. Anyways, bye.
Well, thank you. Now, that struck me as somebody who didn't really want to listen. his mind was already made up, and he was just going to try to suggest that you don't properly understand it. Elizabeth, it has been a very rare opportunity, and you have surprised me, and I suspect you've surprised many others. I want to give you a chance real quickly, if you would, tell us again where you're going to be in the near future and when.
Okay. Let me tell you right now.
San Diego.
San Diego, April 12th and 13th.
Right.
Saturday and Sunday. And that's 45 a day and 75 for the weekend, 50% off to students. April 19th and April 20th, Sheraton Gateway Airport, Century Boulevard. And that's in Los Angeles for the weekend seminar. San Francisco was a weekend seminar, May 3rd and May 4th, The Practical Art of Living a Spiritual Life. And then June 7th and June 8th, Crown Plaza, Seattle downtown. We also have events happening at Cal State University, Long Beach, on April 15th and Thursday the 17th in Los Angeles at UCLA, and that's $7 admission fee for the evening for students and
very reasonable.
Professors and whoever else wants to come.
All right. And your book, Reincarnation, The Missing Link in Christianity, is available, Barnes & Noble, just about every place across the country. Is that right?
Right.
All right, it has been a pleasure having you on. I really want to thank you, and let us do it again someday.
We look forward to it.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. That's Elizabeth Claire Prophet, and an interview I've wanted to do for a long time. And, you know, I'm curious now, from those of you out there, was she what you thought she was going to be? Was her persona what you thought it was going to be? Are your illusions that were no doubt manufactured by the soundbite mass media, are they now shattered or are they intact? We're going into open lines now. And I did what I did tonight with Elizabeth Claire Prophet very, very intentionally. I wanted you to hear her, what she really believes, and while you may not agree with Elizabeth Claire Prophet regarding her spiritual path, I think it important that you got a chance to hear her. Aside from the media assassinations that have been done. You know, all the cult business. And so I think it was obvious to anybody who really bothered to listen that she follows a spiritual path that has no relationship whatsoever to what occurred in Rancho Santa Fe. And I wonder if you would agree with that assessment, having listened to her. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi, Art. This is Sherman in Watsonville.
Yes, sir.
And I want to tell, love your show.
Thank you.
I enjoyed hearing Elizabeth's comments. I wondered if the next time you have her on, if you could ask her what her connections are to the original St. Germain Foundation in Mount Shasta, California.
Well, that would have been a good question. What I'm curious about, sir, is what I just asked about. There's a popular conception of her foisted on the American people by the press. You know, the ranch, the guns, the cult, that sort of thing.
Well, when she comes from, if she's connected to the original ones, they're a very patriotic group. And have been around for quite a long while.
Her answer to the guns was, you know, we do have a Second Amendment. We have the right to protect ourselves. That seemed like a pretty mainstream answer to me.
Yes, exactly. No problem with that. As I said, I grew up in the area where the original, as far as I understood, the original group was started. And so we were familiar with some of their activities. In fact, I talked to some of the, Mr. Ballard's daughter, who was the founder of it. But I did want to make one comment, though, and then I'll let you go. Her comment about judge not lest you be judged is really actually judge not lest you be not judged. And,
right.
And that's the exact opposite of the intent.
All right.
Which is it's often misunderstood. But thank you anyway.
I think we get the spirit of it. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing there, Art?
Okay.
Tony in Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Elizabeth. I don't know. I just wanted to ask Elizabeth what...
She's not here now.
What's that?
You must not have been listening, Tony. She's not here now.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, how are you then tonight, Art?
I'm fine.
Hey, I just want to know, does she think we're going to have a nuclear war? Because I tuned in late.
Yes, Tony. The answer is she does. She is hopeful that such a thing can be prevented, but... her late husband told her to do what she has done in Montana, and he obviously believed that there would be such a war. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art Bell.
Hello.
I haven't called you in a couple years.
Well, that's too long to wait.
I'm the guy that used to post on your news group back before it was invaded about all those things we have in common. Like, I got about 40 things that are the same between us.
I see.
Anyway, it seems that you were kind of affected by her, and I was kind of interested in reversing your question of what we thought to, like, what you thought. I've never heard you that you reincarnation seemed to be making sense to you there.
Reincarnation has made sense to me for a long time, sir, a long time prior to talking to Ms. Prophet. It was an honor to speak with her, but I've considered that as a possibility. Now, underline possibility, because I'm not so sure of anything. I wish I had faith in one single thing. I don't. That's my cross to bear.
Right.
But I think reincarnation is certainly a possibility. What about you?
I'm convinced there's reincarnation. I've had some interesting experiences, like with memories and especially... other countries, you know. I had this vision, a waking vision, laying in bed of a scene in India. And there was sitar music in my ears. You have to remember, I'm not asleep here. I'm meditating. And I see a scene in a restaurant. And I know nothing about India, but I know where I am. And I've never eaten in an Indian restaurant. But
that weekend,
I made sure to go to one.
That sounds exactly to me... Like, thank you, what Elizabeth Clare Prophet said, started her on this whole path, in a sandbox when she was very young, I think, what did she say, 6? And suddenly she was in Egypt. Suddenly in Egypt. You know, I wouldn't necessarily tell you that I can agree or embrace everything that she embraces. But on the other hand, what I did want to do was do what the rest of the media does not do. And that's what we do here. And that is try and really find out what a person is about, what they really do believe. And there are several things that came through with crystal clarity. And that is that she believes in life, not death. and that she is not leading a group of people to a self-propelled Armageddon, as would seem to be the case with the Heaven's Gate group. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
Well, wait till you hear this. This is from Steve in Portland, who always writes, "Till the comet do us part." Does Hillary Clinton listen to Coast to Coast? This is an Associated Press article. Hillary Rodham Clinton today denied administration officials tried to hush up a key figure in the Whitewater investigation by finding him work, calling that suggestion part of a never-ending fictional conspiracy. She said, get this, folks, the fuss over the Whitewater probe reminded her of, quote, some people's obsession with UFOs and Hale-Bopp Comet some days. Hours, end quote, hours later, President Clinton threw back his head and laughed when he heard about his wife's remark and said, did she say that? That's pretty good, he told reporters. Asked if he agreed with Mrs. Clinton's assessment. The president added, if I didn't, I wouldn't disagree with her in public. Yeah, I bet you wouldn't. And that reminds me of an earlier news story about, it was entitled, it was the Associated Press, it's buried under here. Yeah, here it is. Mrs. Clinton denies hush money. Actually, it does cover the UFO thing in here. Let me read it to you as it came across Reuters. Hillary Rodham Clinton says the Whitewater affair is a never-ending fictional conspiracy pursued by zealous critics who remind her of the UFO cult followers who committed mass suicide. The First Lady's colorful remarks were part of a denial of any White House attempt to get hush money to former Associate General Webster Hubbell to keep him from telling all he knows. Now, I liked the headline. Mrs. Clinton denies hush money. What else would you expect? I mean, how else would you read that headline? Mrs. Clinton admits hush money? Or, yes, we paid him big bucks? Or, of course she denies hush money. And I'm not saying that any hush money was paid. I'm just laughing at the headline. And by the way, I've got some pretty good quotes for you as the show goes on. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hello. Art Bell?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I've been listening to your program off and on. If I don't fall asleep, it's so interesting. I wondered if you have ever visited Prophet's place.
No, I never have.
Well, my husband got very interested in her, and we went up there to see the whole place, and it really is a cult. I hate to tell you, but we spoke to people. She sells property to the people. At that time, this is several years ago.
Well, that doesn't make it a cult.
No, but she sells it to them for $48,000, and then they have to give it back to her. And they're only allowed a strip of land there. And we spoke to people that they're terrified to go on the outside because she depicts just doom for everybody if they leave that place. And one man was terribly upset. He said he just hates it there. His wife is terrified.
But I've had, but ma'am, I have had countless, you know, her visit to come on the show to be a guest was advertised, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time.
Right.
And I've had countless faxes and emails from people who were, at, you know, inside.
Right.
With varying opinions. But none of them said that there was any problem when they wanted to leave. They just walked out.
Well, yes. It's again, an inner strength.
So it's not that. But what I'm trying to say is, when you're saying it's a cult, my traditional understanding of a cult is that it doesn't quite work that way. People just don't walk out when they want to.
Well, I don't know how many have walked out because we could have stayed for dinner. But these people donate all their services, and there's some very intelligent people.
So you were one day there?
Yes, but I mean, what we saw, and we went out and
that's a lot to conclude on the basis of one day and not even staying for dinner.
There wasn't a smiling face in there. It was very depressing. These people just, there wasn't one person who looked happy, I'll tell you that.
All right. Well, look, I appreciate your call, but I'm sorry. I'm not buying into it's a cult because I didn't see smiles on their faces. Or I went to visit and they didn't seem happy. God, that's so dangerous. The reason I had her on was so that you could actually hear what the woman believes, whether or not you agree with what she said. I wanted to do what most of the American media does not do, and that's actually allow you to hear what she believes, not to clip up sound bites and serve them up in an effort to shape a story the way you want it to be. Cult. Guns. Bunkers. That sort of thing. Did you really sense that that's what she was all about as you listened? Did you sense that here was a woman who was going to bring about, as David Koresh did, either by antagonizing the authorities or himself firing the first shot, depending on what you believe about that? He brought on his own apocalypse. Did you sense that from her? No, I don't think so. That's why I had her on. I've had a pretty good taste myself lately of what the American media serves up when it decides it wants a story portrayed in a certain way. It's not fair. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Yes, we had occasion, Bob and Pocatello, we had occasion to visit the Church Universal Triumphant.
You actually went over and visited, huh?
Yeah. We had made some acquaintances up in the park of some pretty sensitive and talented people, and their ranch is, their property goes up from Gardner to South Entrance. And I might, to this lady was concerned about the buffalo being killed, I might say the state of Montana is doing the killing of the buffalo. And
yeah, I know there's a big fight going on about that. They just sort of wanted to lump her in with that.
Well, I just wanted to set that straight. But in any case, their freedom to worship the way they want to worship is assuring that is assuring my freedom to worship the way I want to worship. And I think
right.
What happened at Waco, people are free to believe what they want to believe. And I was very concerned for the Church Universal Triumphant when the thing happened down at Waco, because I think they have a parallel thing. It's probably you have and I have. That is that I have collected firearms since I was a teenager, and I believe that the Second Amendment means what it says. And
that's right.
And she has this common belief. But anyway, on the visit to the ranch, my wife and I were especially impressed by their teaching of the children. They had. They're making do the best they can with, the resources they have, and we had an opportunity to visit their they had converted some mobile homes into classrooms, and we visited several grades, and they use a Montessori instruction
right.
system.
Right, so you really got a pretty good look.
Oh, yeah, we spent a whole day at it, and children use the McGuffey readers, and we got to visit there. They don't eat much meat, all right, and but they make bread, good heavy bread out of all.
Well, I'd be in trouble then. I like burgers. I like steak.
You and me both. I like a good steak once in a while.
All right, well, listen, thank you very much. Yeah, I'd have a problem with that. Matter of fact, I had two delicious hamburgers the night before I got on the air. Absolutely delicious. But that's a small matter, and the point that man was trying to make is well taken. One, that it's more than time that we stopped looking at people because they possess firearms to protect themselves with. So what? Now, I know that doesn't go down so easily on the East Coast, but I live out here in the West. I live, and I mentioned it during the interview, in an area where if somebody came after me, I am my own first line of protection. I have no illusions about that. And those who live out here and think that they will be protected if somebody comes after them are, in my opinion, delusional. Yes, the police, the sheriff, they'll do whatever they can. But when there is a large space between you and those who would endeavor and certainly try to protect you, then, in my opinion, you better be able to protect yourself. There's no guarantees in life, but you do what you can. And the Second Amendment says you have that right. And I believe it is not only a Second Amendment right, but it's a God-given or Creator-given right for you to protect your own life. That, folks, is choosing life. And if there was a thread throughout the interview with Mrs. Prophet, it was the choice of life. Did you not get that? Did that not come through? Whether you agree or disagree with what she believes from a spiritual point of view, it was obvious that she believes in life. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Art?
I'm fine.
Man, it's great to talk to you. Let me tell you, I agree with Ms. Prophet and I disagree with Ms. Prophet. I'll tell you why. And I think you and I are spiritual brothers in a lot of ways.
Maybe so.
And you tell me if I'm wrong. I see it as, I grew up Southern Baptist from South Carolina. And I see it as I have questioned it, and I went through a struggle, but being Baptist alone is enough to make you question. And so as I went through about 6 years of heavy debating, even thinking that maybe I was agnostic at some point, I finally have come to the conclusion I see it as a pie. As we have Christianity, we have Buddhism, we have a number of religions. You add all of them into this piece of the pie. And we've kind of broken our own pieces of the pie into Christianity, and this is what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if we're willing to see, just like Ms. Prophet has done, she has her piece of the pie, and who knows if we'll ever see that whole picture or eat the whole pie, if you will. But if we'll just look beyond those walls, we'll see the connectedness in that it's one big pie. It's not separate from one another. All these pieces come together, and if we look outside of it, we'll see the connectedness of it. But I think it's the things that we're taught keeps us limited into that little piece.
Well, I thought a key thing that she said, and you may have heard me ask her, a key thing she said was that there are many possible paths to the same answers.
Absolutely.
Not just hers. She does not hold hers out as the only true path, the only true answer.
And what a stress reliever that is when you know, I find the openness to people when you can see that connectedness and they say, okay, you know, let's say they're Buddhist. The connectedness, I mean, there's not a stress that you don't feel withdrawn from them because you know that you're a part of them.
Well, I appreciate that, sir. Thank you. You're right. I'm leery of people and leaders who say, I am the only way. I am the only path. You must follow me, and any other path is going to send you down to shoveling coal into the fire, if you follow me. I'm not so sure there's any single path. I think there are many paths for a person to become spiritual on their own. Does that make sense to you? It does to me. And I know a lot of you are sitting out there saying, blasphemy, there's only one true path. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not that sure, so burn me. Well, sure, we'd love to. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Hi.
Hey, this is William from Seattle. How you doing?
Fine.
Hey, I am a student of Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
All right.
And I'll tell you, she is a wonderful woman, and it was great to have her on your show.
Well, you know what got to me was a lady who called a little while ago.
I heard it.
And she said, well, I went out there. I could have stayed for dinner, but I didn't. And I got to tell you, it's a cult. I saw it. They didn't smile. It was a cult.
No.
God, I'm telling you.
I thought that was kind of funny because, you know, people tend to judge based on their own opinions, basically, on their own perceptions.
Well, at least the lady went out there and made a judgment. But most people are judging and saying that based on what the American media reports, and I've seen a number of reports on Elizabeth Clare Prophet,
right?
And they paint her the same way every time.
Well, I'll tell you, I have a group of friends out here. We're all in the church, and we listen to your show every night. And I think the thing we like about you, too, and I think most of your callers could probably agree with this, is the quality of the heart. People can lie, but, you know, when you get to a point, you can see through it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it was like, how much of what she was saying sounded like a lie? Now, you know, that's what really interested me in the church from the beginning.
Yeah, what I was trying to tell people is, and I know that a lot of people disagree with her philosophy of spiritualism, which is fine. But when you listen to her voice, it should have been absolutely obvious over the 3 hours,
right,
that she's totally sincere.
Oh, no doubt.
And that she's no David Koresh, and that she's not somebody who's going to lead a bunch of people into drinking Kool-Aid or slopping down some pudding and going off into the next level.
You know, she gives a good explanation of why people don't always remember past lives. And I'd like to tell your listeners about this. There's something that she calls it God's grace. It's the
yes.
veil of forgetfulness.
Yes.
Now, how many of us have done bad things, terrible things, or whatever kind of things, and we feel guilty, right? Now, imagine having 1,000 lifetimes.
Of course,
say,
yes.
And being able to remember all the wrong things you've done. I mean, that would be burdensome.
A big burden.
Yeah, so you figure if karma is the return of actions and reactions, basically what's going to happen is you're going to go through life, like you said your wife was telling you, you're going to go through things and you're going to get returned things, good or bad, and you're going to have to deal with them.
Yep.
So let God deal with that. You know, giving it back to you, I mean. One other thing I wanted to mention is last week, my brother Chris and I faxed you some lyrics to a song that we wrote called The Quickening. And we're coming out with a CD, and I want to get it to you. And I don't know, I know that there were some other people who called up saying about music. They had written some.
You actually wrote something called The Quickening.
Yeah, and I think that you'll really like it. And I'm sure. Oh, this is another thing I wanted to mention. This is why I've been trying to call all night. I haven't gotten your book yet. But do you talk anything about The Quickening with the entertainment industry? Because one thing I've noticed is, yes, it's happening with our government. It's happening in religious mm-hmm. situations. But as a musician, and I've been given a blessing by my teacher, who is Elizabeth Clare Prophet, to write music to actually teach people. Because what do we see nowadays? We see bands out there, and I'm not necessarily trying to judge their music, but look at the subtlety of their message. The heart of the rock and roll you know, the lyrics to these things, I think they're promoting The Quickening in a very subtle way, a very subtle way.
Well, look, I've even wondered about myself, sir. I appreciate your call. I've had deep thoughtfulness about my own part in it. In other words, am I documenting it? Or am I at the head of the parade? Well, I think that I'm documenting it. Am I ducking this one? No, I don't think so. I've thought it out carefully myself, and I believe that I am documenting it. And I believe that exposing its ongoing occurrence is an important thing to do, hence the book. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, look at the radio.
Yes, turn that sucker off.
Okay.
All right, where are you?
This is JJ in Austin.
All right, hi, JJ.
Hi, I lost you earlier.
You sure did.
I was going to ask a couple of questions. I didn't realize you were cut so short on time. I'm going to at least ask one of these questions to you to just get your take on it.
Sure, go ahead.
And before I ask it, I got to say, the guy that just called in that gave the analogy of the pie,
yes,
that was beautiful. I've been looking for that analogy for years. Like I told you earlier, I grew up in a mainstream, non-denominational Christian home. And
all right, we've got to do this quick, JJ.
Okay, when looking for your soulmate, should you just ignore everybody else?
Well, all right, what she said, JJ, was when looking for your soulmate, don't go out there and physically search. What she said was build within yourself, and there will be a light around you, and when you meet your soulmate, there will be no question about it. She said, I believe in love at first sight. And by the way, JJ, so do I. You'll know, trust me, you won't have to ask questions. You will simply know in all of your being. We'll be back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 10th, 1997.
It is, and it is a wonderful world, isn't it? I've got some unforgettable quotes for you here in a moment.
The colors of the rainbow.
Anti-smoking spokesperson Brooke Shields once said, quote, smoking kills, and if you're killed, you've lost a very important part of your life. Former Vice President Dan Quayle once said, we're ready for an unforeseen event that may or may not occur. The former mayor of Chicago, Mayor Daley, once said, the police are not here to create disorder, they're here to preserve disorder. He actually said that. Ronald Reagan actually said, if you've seen one redwood tree, you've seen them all. Of course, he had a sense of humor. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm Louise from the San Francisco Bay Area Coastside.
Hello, Louise.
We have spent some time with Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
Have you?
We used to live in Montana.
Ah.
We moved up there the same month, same year as they did, about 70 miles from their ranch. We didn't know that they moved there. We didn't even know who they were.
Oh, I see.
I have quite a story to tell. We have volunteered to go on to the TV interviews or anything whenever they were trying to put down Elizabeth Clare Prophet. As people who did not belong to her organization, but people who know them,
yes.
came to know them.
Yes.
We were told when we moved in that we belonged to her organization by the locals, and we didn't know anything about it. And so,
why do you think the locals, just because you lived near there, would think you were a part of it?
Because we were from California also. And she moved from California.
Well, heck, there's a lot of people that moved from California out to my state and Montana and Idaho and all kinds of spacier places.
This is what occurred. And we saw the locals bankrupt at least a dozen businesses of people that came and moved from California and set up businesses there who were not associated with her. But the locals became so paranoid that they felt that anybody from California...
But you know what the fault of that, you know why? It's because of the media. I'll tell you something. I've learned a big lesson in the last few weeks about our media. I sincerely mean this, and a lot of you who are regular listeners to my program, I suspect, have learned this lesson along with me. And I mean this from the bottom of my, and it's one of the reasons I had Elizabeth Clare Prophet on, because I wanted you to really hear her. What she believed. And I found that generally when the media, whether it's print media, and they're a little better, television is the worst offender of all. When they come to visit you, ostensibly to get the truth or a story, very, very, very few of them in 1997 really care at all about getting the story. There are some exceptions, and I could name them, but I won't. I just simply learned over this last several weeks that the media makes up their mind about who you are and what you are, or a story. And, you know, I don't want to go back into the whole Hale-Bopp thing, but that's the origins of it, and then the suicides and all the rest of it. And once the media has decided they're going to tell a story a certain way, by God, they're going to tell it that way. And don't let the facts get in the way. They don't want to hear about the facts, particularly if it's going to ruin the angle of their story. And so, some time ago, the media decided that Elizabeth Clare Prophet was leading a cult. And they talk about the weapons, and they talk about the bunkers, and they talk about bunker mentality and all the rest of that. And nobody ever really sits down and listens to what her belief system is. Now, did she sound to you like David Koresh? Did she sound to you like somebody who was or is trying to instigate her own Armageddon? Not even close. Not if you listened. Now, you may certainly disagree with her spiritual philosophy, and that's fine. But the point of the interview, the real point of the interview, was that you understand what her philosophy is. You may disagree with it, but that you understand it, so that you understand it is not what ABC's 2020 portrayed it to be, or what so many other news organizations who are bent on telling the story the way they want the angle to be. Instead, we had 3 hours, and we laid it out. So I know a lot of you disagree with her view of spirituality. All right? Biblically, religiously, you disagree. But one thing I think you should have gathered from that interview is that this is a woman who believes in life, not death. Who believes that if there is prophecy, there is hope to try and change it, not to make it self-fulfilling. That should have come through crystal clear. If it did, then we did a service, I hope. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, good morning, Art. I very much enjoy your show, and I'm so glad I got through. My name's Rick. I'm calling from the south side of Chicago in Flossmoor.
Hey there, Rick.
How are you this morning?
Very well.
All right. I had a question about Rodney Barker. That was quite, that was probably one of your most intriguing shows I've heard.
Glad you liked it.
My question is, did you do any more, how shall I say, investigating or looking into basically his claims or with what is really going on in the
I would say that about 90% of the people who responded, who had looked into this, verified that what he said is exactly true.
Well, I have to say that myself. I lived in North Carolina for a couple of years in Wilmington, the Cape Fear River, and I have friends there who I called that day, and I actually went and got one of his books, but I called and talked to them, and they verified pretty much right down the lines of everything he said. I mean, they didn't know, of course, the specifics, but, I mean, my friends live in the near the ocean, or one of them lives right on the ocean, and I was just so appalled because I love seafood and, you know, I've lived near the ocean most of my life, so, I mean, wow. I mean, what can we do? I mean, is probably be my next question, if anything.
Well, actually, Elizabeth Clare Prophet was a lot more positive about where all this is going than I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm afraid I'm not that positive. I think we've passed the point of no return.
Right, like with the planes.
Yep. I do. And that doesn't mean the end of the world, as I keep telling everybody. It just means we're going to have a change. And I think that, thank you very much, that I've documented that. Again, book plug. This is really important to me. I didn't write this book to make a bunch of money. If it makes money, fine. You know, authors don't make a lot of money in books. I wrote this book because I wanted you to know. I wanted to document for you carefully exactly what I've been telling you. And I'm not a Native American, but I do believe that we are pushing Mother Earth. And she's getting ready to push back. As a matter of fact, the first pressure can be felt all around us in every area of human endeavor. Socially, we talked about the blank-eyed little kids that are killing each other at an ever-increasing rate. Violence among our young is just absolutely going through the roof. Down a little bit, did you know, for adults? But going way up among the young. Why do you suppose that might be? Way up. That's where we've got our problem. Drug use among the young, way up. Economically, look down a few years and you'll see what's going to happen. I describe it in the book. Politically, my God, what a mess. I view both present political parties as hopeless disasters, crippled by scandal and by meaningless debate. And I could go on and on and on, and I do in this book. That was the whole point of the book, and it's all quite well documented. Is it simply a product of modern media? In other words, we're hearing more about it. That's the argument detractors would make of what I believe. Well, my book will prove to you that indeed it is not simply more mass communication. That this trending, this quickening, is very real, absolutely real, and occurring now. We're in the middle of it now. And that's why I wrote this book. It's important to me. It's really important to me, and I think it's important to everybody. And I'm not a prophet. So I sure can't tell you what's coming. I can only tell you something is. A change is on the way. And when you have read this, you will be convinced. Again, my book is called The Quickening. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
This is Charlie calling from Medford.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to make a little comment here real quick about if you've been watching any of your local network news on TV lately in the past two or three days about that missing bomber.
The A-10.
Uh-huh. Have you noticed how, you know, even our local channels here in the Medford area are dropping little insidious little hints that this guy has just up and flown the coop with the plane?
Sure, broken arrow kind of deal.
Oh, yeah. They're just dropping these insidious little hints, and they're slowly brainwashing the general public. Now, when they find the plane, if it winds up being a crashed or downed airplane for whatever reason, they're going to still be saying he was trying to fly it to the outer Mongolia somewhere and trying to make him out to be some sort of a crook. And, well, what if something did go wrong? You know, what the heck? This is the way our media is going anymore.
Well, that's because it's...
We do have
government censorship for news. Sir. That's because it's a sexy story to tell. Now, listen to me for a moment. For some reason or another, he was in the mountainous area of Colorado. If his airplane went down in the mountains of Colorado, it may be arguably years, if it crashed, before the crash site is ever located.
Oh, for sure.
So to be jumping to these conclusions...
is really premature.
But it's sexy.
Uh-huh, they're putting frills and fringes on it, and you'd be surprised how many of the people out there are eating it up with a big old spoon.
I know. That's...
it's terrible.
I know. Of course, it could be. I mean, it could be.
Yeah, but
I think it is.
Comes up one way or the other, let's wait and hold
it. That's right. That's right. Thank you. It is not the most likely a probability, in my opinion. By far not the most likely. It is the least likely. But it is the sexiest to jump to speculate about. Oh, my God. I mean, look at this. What is today's date? The 11th of April, right? Now, what is the media really trying to tell us? Let's cut through the bull. They're trying to say that the 19th is coming, the anniversary of Waco, and that we have some wild officer of the U.S. Air Force that has taken an airplane armed with 2,000 pounds worth of bombs and some sort of terrible terroristic vengeance is going to be visited on the American people in retribution to the government for Waco once again. That's cutting through the bull and saying it like it is, right? Well, the most likely possibility is this plane crashed in the mountains. If what people are insisting upon speculating about should come true, then God help us. But I certainly would not jump to that as the most likely scenario. A wild card line, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
This is Mike in Glendale.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Fine.
Yeah, just a quick 3 points. I don't think that how can anybody criticize Elizabeth when every member of Congress and their family has a bunker to go to, number one.
They sure do.
And as far as prophecies, my view is, this is a conjecture, it's not a prophecy. Is that the world situation is unclear and calls for pragmatism. And finally, the thing I think I talked to you during a break about spiritualism.
Yes, sir.
And I think that there's spiritual inspiration, there's spiritualism, there's spiritual conditions, and they're all separate items. And anybody on individual spiritual paths are just as dysfunctional as any organized religion, so no one has a monopoly on, quote, righteousness, if you will.
Well, a lot of people think they do, which is what, of course, the problem is. Theirs is the only true path, and if you don't believe that, then by God, we're going to have a war.
I myself am one of those Republican Protestants of the Mother Nature variation.
Republican Protestant of the Mother Nature variation. That's a new one.
I think Hillary, the First Lady has a crush on you, Art.
Goodbye, sir.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Her remarks are somewhat startling, aren't they? And the president's response, I thought, was very interesting. And he said, in essence, if I disagreed with her, I sure as hell wouldn't say so in public. Now, I didn't hear the president say that. Maybe some of you did. So I would ask you, was there a big, broad smile on his face when he said that and a laugh? Or did you detect an underlying fear? As though, were he to publicly disagree with her, there would be real hell to pay in the private part of the White House that night. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art Bell.
Good morning.
Northern Minnesota calling.
Yes, sir.
Had a tremendous Northern Lights display this morning.
Really?
Right about 1:32 o'clock our time. I mean, Art, it looked like a Hollywood opening out there with fire-breathing dragons.
Well, in today's society, you might suggest it was, and people would believe it. Hollywood did it.
Well, I can imagine what would happen if some of our ancient ancestors had seen that.
That's true.
It was, I mean, I just stood there for a half hour and just watched it. It's about 10 degrees out there, too.
Do you happen to recall Father Martin?
Yes.
Do you remember what he said about 7 to 10 days or so, something in the skies? Watch
correct. And I don't know if that's it, because quite simply, it could have been that part of that flare that we're supposed to go through from the sun.
Oh, it probably was.
Because I can tell you right now, normally I listen to you either out of Cleveland, Omaha.
Yes.
Chicago.
Yes.
And one other place, Minneapolis.
Yes.
I couldn't pick you up on any stations early this morning during that.
Ah, we're talking magnetic storm.
And I mean to tell you, WLS was the only station that I could even faintly pick you up on. Minneapolis, which is only 200 air miles from me, I couldn't pick up anything. It was just dead.
Well, that's a testament then to WLS's ability to plow through even a depleted ionosphere.
But I can only tell the people, I'm surprised nobody else called you. It was absolutely spectacular, Art.
I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
And don't rule out what Father Malachi said. There would, of course, be a scientific explanation for it, right? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Hey, do I get the honors?
Well, actually, now that I look at the clock, you do. Yes, you do. Where are you?
I'm in Palm Desert, California.
That's a good place to do them from. Hey, you know what?
What?
I'm going to be doing an interview later this morning in Palm Desert. Might listen for it. On your radio station. All right, do it.
Okay. Good night, America.
Well, that's the way to do it. I will add to it the rest of the cosmos. Thank you all. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Good night.